Oh, I'm sorry. Did I break your concentration?
Somewhere between science and superstition.
We have such sights to show you.
Strange Eons.
Welcome to Strange Eons Radio. That's Eric over there.
Hello.
That's Vanessa over there.
Hello.
Oh, hello, guys.
Howdy.
That makes me Kelly. How about that Emerald City, huh?
So good. What a city of emeralds that we experienced together. Woo team.
I hope you liked the special episode.
I'm sure everything about it was amazing, because it sure was amazing to be there.
So a little peek behind the curtain. We haven't actually gone to Emerald City. We are recording this just before we do that episode. So hopefully it all went well, and hopefully it's been released as bonus content, but we have no idea at this time.
Yeah.
In keeping with that, what I'd like to talk about is also next week's episode.
Yeah.
Which is number 150.
Dun, dun, dun.
That is true.
Uh-huh. So exciting.
And we're doing something a little different there. As you guys know, I always like to do themed stuff and things like that. I mean, the entire gimmick of our show is a theme.
Yeah.
But this next week is going to be all about us.
God. What does that mean, all about us?
Well, I figure, you know, we'll go into it the same way we always do. We talk about some movies and all that stuff. But instead of a topic, we're going to be talking about what we are all up to.
Okay.
So, you know, this is something that the projection booth does every year, and they call it Ego Fest.
Oh, nice.
And it's basically just catching up everybody on our projects. If there are any questions that listeners want answered, they should send us something. I'm holding in my hand right here, you guys, a handwritten letter from Danny Williford.
Oh my God.
Oh, nice.
And it's fucking great. I mean, hand-drawn envelope too.
Oh my God, that's so cool.
And he asked some questions and everything, and I thought, fuck that, I'm not writing back. I will answer these questions on the air, Danny. That's how I roll. He did say something about, also, let's keep this just between you and I, but...
No.
Yeah.
He didn't mean it.
I'm an open book.
There you go.
That's so cool. Yeah. So yeah, I guess if anybody has any questions they've been dying to ask us, or things they want to mention to us, then this is the time, as well as getting an opportunity for us to talk about what we're up to.
Do not promise to answer all of them.
No, we do not. But we will at least address that you asked.
Sure.
Yeah.
Thank you for the question.
Like, Danny asks this. I am not answering that.
Absolutely not.
These are all great people. I'm not expecting any questions that we would go, oh God, no.
That sounds really fun. And yeah, I'm really stoked, because I feel like sometimes I only see you guys in the context of the show, so I don't even know all the time what you're up to. It'd be really, really great to hear what everyone's doing.
Yeah, I killed a guy.
I mean, like a new one, or because I feel like this happens pretty regularly.
Tune in next week.
Ooh.
Before that, though, let me tell you what I watched.
Yes, please.
I saw Venom, Let There Be Carnage.
Uh-oh. Oh, hey.
This movie is garbage. However, it's still better than the first one.
I can't remember enough to agree or disagree.
There is a certain amount of charm to the Venom character they have created that is not there in the comic books.
There's a real loving relationship between the two characters that is really fun to watch in this one.
A little bit of that, and also just the humor. They've made him an asshole as a superhero.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And, you know, finding out that he was kind of the nerd geek of the symbiotes, and that he was kind of a weakling and all that, you know, that stuff gets played upon in this movie. And I can't remember if you liked it. I think I remember you saying it was trash, but it was exactly what you needed.
Yeah, that's about right. It was pretty bad. I didn't like it as much as the first one, as far as I could remember. But I mean, it was fine. I think my final I came to the conclusion that it was missing a bunch of content that was probably going to show back up in a DVD or Blu-ray edition.
Right. Yeah, I could believe that. Here's my takeaway from it was, I can't believe that we missed out on having Tom Hardy and Woody Harrelson do a good movie because they were busy making this movie.
They were supposed to do another movie together?
Well, who knows, but they didn't. What I'm saying is we got this movie instead. Those are two powerhouse actors in a really shitty movie.
And I think I remember hearing or seeing that Tom Hardy had co-written this movie. So,
I saw his name on the written. Yeah.
And the other writer, she's like not, I mean, this doesn't seem like her wheelhouse. This doesn't seem like the kind of content she's done before. So
if you were to tell me that Tom Hardy was like a big Venom fan and he was writing this because he loved the character,
I'm sure.
I would be very disappointed.
Oh, no. But I think that's the case. I think he's just a bad writer. He can't be perfect at everything.
But Tom Hardy wrote the Venom movie?
Yeah, co-wrote this one.
Oh, wow.
I mean, he's listed as a writer. Now, that could just be that he comes in, he punches up his own dialogue.
I think it was his thing. I think it's like his baby.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. From my understanding.
The reason I say so bad is that there are enough nods to other Marvel properties that I'm like, could he really know this much about the Marvel universe? And he's got... They introduced the character of Shriek in this.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, I was not expecting this. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's not really much like the comic version of her, but she's got her powers and got a weird eye thing going on. Woody Harrelson was definitely chewing up the scenery in this.
Yeah.
He's got a really bad hairpiece on.
It's really bad. Really, really bad.
But
almost unwatchable.
At the end of it, I was like, all right, that was shit, but I watched the entire thing.
There you go.
Wait a second. High bar. Okay, now. So Strange Tomatoes ratings. Now, this movie already has a 66%.
It does. It's got 66.
The problem with the Strange Tomatoes rating is if you just like this shitty movie, Eric, it now has a 99% rating on our thing. So
I love that it'll never be able to reach 100. Just never.
Hopefully, go with this. Go with the letterbox. We can refine it a little bit more because it's a star system on there. I think it's 5 stars, so maybe we'll refine it a little better.
Oh, man. Well, I was trying to figure out what I've been doing with all my time lately. And I was like, man, I haven't seen as many movies as I normally do. What on earth have I've been doing?
Shouldn't you save this for episode 150?
No, definitely not. This is almost embarrassing.
Oh, okay.
I've been playing the Guardians of the Galaxy video game a lot.
Oh, my.
Which I have to say is one of the better games I've played in the last few years. It's got the heart and the feel of the Guardians characters. It's not necessarily based on the films. It's more based on the comic characters. So they aren't designed after the actors. You can get skins. You find costumes all over the game and you can get a skin that is the costume, which is the quote unquote look, or at least the dressing of what they wore in previous movies. But
they didn't get actor profile permissions.
None of those actors, and they do not look like the actors, except for maybe Groot. Because he's a stick.
Groot looks like Vin Diesel. Whoa, what a twist.
Shockingly. But no, it's so fun. And there's a lot. So in games, I think it's really hard to find that balance where it's like, okay, well, I have player agency, but I want to do good. But also, what would those actual characters do? And there's a lot of moments in the game where if you purposely choose to fuck up, it rewards you for it. Which is really fun. And there's a lot of conversation dialogue choices, and you can play stupid. Like, there's early on in the game, there's a moment where Peter Quill may or may not have sired a child. And there's a girl, he dated a girl, and there's a daughter that she has that would be about the right time. And there's a conversation pop-up that goes, do the math, ignore the math. And so you can choose which direction to go. It's really fun. There was a few puzzles that I purposely messed up because I wanted to open the wrong door and see what was behind the wrong door. It was really, really neat. It would reward you by giving you a bunch of enemies you had to kill, but then have like a neat little thing in the back of the room. So I don't know. I haven't had a game playthrough that felt so right to the actual property in a long time.
That's cool.
What is your preferred platform?
PlayStation.
And that's what this is?
I think it might be out on a few things, but I believe I'm playing this on, I might be playing it on Xbox. I don't know. It's dark. I'm holding a controller. I don't know. Somebody handed it to me and I started pressing buttons and here we are. I think it might actually be on Xbox.
Well, all right then. Sure, why not?
What have you been doing?
Well, I finally watched Shang-Chi. And I'm glad both of you prepared me for it because I was able to enjoy it for probably longer than you guys did. Mm-hmm. But at some point, it definitely hits that, okay. Mm-hmm. It's like, why are you riding a dragon? It's just like,
so weird.
Damn it. But man, the casting, he is fantastic.
He's so good.
Yeah, I liked him.
And the, like you said, Awkwafina was really good for most of the film. It's not her fault. The writing made her weird by the end, but I thought she was pretty strong. And it's sort of like they're, I don't know if they were afraid of the Hawkeye Black Widow problem for this character and decided mm-hmm. we have to give him the rings and make him into a superhero instead of just doing, like you said, this, like, go the Netflix route with this character. Have him be that Daredevil, Luke Cage, Punisher series or something instead, because that first half was really, really good.
It was really so good. Fun. So I have not kept up with the Shang-Chi character in the comics, so I don't know, is that what he is now?
I don't know
superhero?
Either. Yeah,
I don't know either. I know that there's a more recent run, but it's hard to say. Yeah. I mean, it's frustrating too, because I feel like they could have kept his abilities as being just an incredible martial artist and gone to fantastical places with it without involving rings and dragons and shit.
Right.
Because when he does the MMA fight in like with aliens or space people or fantastical people, right. It's so fucking fun.
That was a high point. Yeah. It's that problem that Marvel is going to start bumping up against. If every single movie is an end of the world scenario, then, you know, that's not a big deal anymore.
Yeah. I mean, they spent what, 7, 8, 9 movies building up to the Thanos storyline, and which is why it was so good. And you'd have that final end movie basically be just a giant battle almost. It goes on for 2.5 hours in various ways.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, they're losing that ability to build something.
Yeah. I had a moment last week where I was asking a friend of mine, how is he fitting in? How is Shang-Chi going to fit into which next Marvel edition? Like, where is it going to be, a multiverse? Is it going to be like, how is this all going to fit together? Is he going to be part of the Eternals? And I had like, it took some puzzling, and I think he's probably going to be part of the Eternals. Maybe. I don't know. It's
yeah. Hmm. Interesting to see, I guess.
I mean, you know, objectively a good movie.
Yeah.
It looked great. The acting was great. Mm-hmm. The effects were great. All of that stuff. I just wanted what I wanted.
That bus scene, but like 5 more times.
But the problem was they set it up so beautifully that it looked like it was going to be, you know, the battle on the side of the building and the stuff with the sister.
Yeah.
And I was like,
that was great.
This is so cool. Okay, I guess it's a Marvel movie now.
They fit so much in too, between like the sister and then it's like 2 or 3 endings at the butt of it where you're like, oh God, how many movies are we going to have to do to explain all this crap you just put out here?
Yeah, well, I watched something. It is the polar opposite of that. It is from, I believe, 1936.
Oh.
And it is called The Devil Doll.
What?
This is directed by Todd Browning.
Oh my God.
And it's got Lionel Barrymore in it. And this movie is so fucking bonkers. It has gone into my top 10.
Whoa.
I just like, wow, how have I missed this? And I was scrolling through something and I saw the Todd Browning thing. And look, I am not a Todd Browning devotee. I like Freaks way more than I like Dracula. And I think his Dracula is kind of weak.
Yeah.
But this movie is my favorite Todd Browning movie now.
I don't think I've ever heard of this. And I feel like I've heard a lot of things
Lionel
that have deviled all in the title.
Escapes prison.
Okay.
And he then dresses as an old lady who is a doll maker
to
take revenge on the people who put him in prison. But his dolls are actually shrunken humans that he has go out and do his bidding.
Oh my God.
So he sells these people, these living dolls.
Oh my God.
Then kill the people.
This is
I was like, what is going on here? It's so fucking good.
That sounds great.
That's fucking bonkers.
So it is available only as a rental or a purchase for like a dollar more. I'm glad I decided to purchase it because now I can watch it over and over. God, so good. The Devil Doll, 1936. Do not get the 1960 something Devil Doll movie. Very, very different.
Yeah.
This one has the Devil Doll with a dash.
Yes.
Yes. Wow. Oh, that sounds fucking bonkers. Well, I checked something out. This was the other thing that I was spending all my time on when I was like, I'm sure I also have spending hours and hours and hours doing something else too. The Netflix put out a animated series based off of the League of Legends property called Arcane. Did either of you guys catch this?
No.
No, and all of those words you said to me made no sense.
Sure.
What is League of Legends?
League of Legends is a very, very, very popular game. Online, it's kind of like you form little groups and go and attack other little groups.
It's kind of the foremost competitive for money video games, I think, in the world. One of the big tournament games.
It's a big tournament game for sure.
Is this a MMORPG? Or as I like to say, a multi...
For somebody who works almost exclusively in game, I don't know.
Okay.
Because I've never played it. But I do know people who are obsessed with it. And, you know, people have been cosplaying it for years. Yeah. And it's a huge, huge part of the game universe.
When you look at the shots I've seen, it looks sort of like
a top-down
version of like Mortal Kombat or something, except everybody's fighting at the same time.
Yeah, it's almost like a StarCraft. Like, I feel like you set everything up and that all these people who are listening are going to be screaming. Right. Yeah. You're so fucking wrong. So like I said, I don't know much about League of Legends. This show came out and a lot of people were excited about it. And I was like, I don't think I'm going to be able to watch this because this is just not my thing. And then I went ahead and just caved and started watching. It has really, if you like League of Legends, it's just sort of going to be a little bit more fun, but as a property itself, it is incredible. Huh. It is an incredibly well-told sort of steampunk, feels almost like a French retro fantastical series.
Wow.
And it is so much deeper and darker and more beautiful than it has any right to be.
Is it anime or what country is it?
No, it's
Do you know?
I mean, it's American. I mean, it's English speaking. It just has those kind of vibes to it. It's not treated like anime, though. It's animated in a little bit more of a, you know, normative classical style that we see nowadays.
Mm, cool.
But it is beautiful. And there were moments in it that I was like, what the actual fuck? Like, I was hurt inside. There was an episode that I spent 3 days just being really like, it was weighing on me. And I think for people who had played the game, they are a little bit more familiar with these characters. These characters are not super deeply, the whole idea behind League of Legends is they're kind of leaving it open for your interpretation. So they present some very, very basic, you know, surface level ideas about these different characters.
That's a good way to describe how you didn't want to write a whole bunch of stuff about the characters you're creating for a game. Yeah. We're leaving it open so you can interpret.
And they also...
And then we're going to give it to this property here to deal you exactly.
Totally. Yeah. And for years they've left the rights open. So if you want to do something creative with this property, you can. They're like trying to engage the fans in this way, or at least that's how it's been for a long time. But now, I mean, this show is, it's, it just goes, creates this whole universe that I think they've already said, yeah, this is kind of like a side version of what this world could be. So they're not even committing to this, but as from the game's perspective, but the actual show is fucking unreal.
And it's called Arcane?
Arcane.
Okay.
Yeah. Check it out.
Well, I've got another one that I've been anticipating a long time. Amazon's Wheel of Time.
Yeah.
And this is a series that's been weird for me in that there's about 14 books, I think.
Yeah. Is Robert Jordan still with us?
No, no. Okay. I think there's at least three, maybe four of the books are not him.
Okay.
But I've read the first three or four books probably three times. Mm-hmm. And I've read up to eight or nine mm-hmm. twice. And I keep getting bogged down. It became such a giant world. It's like, none of the original characters seem to be in it anymore. Mm. It's like, whatever. But those first few books I freaking love. And so far, pretty solid interpretation. I mean, there's some stuff moved around and there's some things that are done differently, which, you know, is some smart choices because these books are gigantic.
Yeah.
Some of the complaints I've heard is that it is blatantly ripping off Lord of the Rings moments. Did you feel that at all? And are the books that way?
Any fantasy book you want to, it's sort of like if you were to, like we were when the Mars movie came out, where people were saying, well, this is just ripping off Star Wars. Like, well, no, actually Star Wars ripped this off.
John Carter.
Yeah, John Carter of Mars. You could trace very, very tons of properties in sci-fi back to John Carter of Mars. You can take, I don't know if I've ever read a fantasy novel that you cannot directly trace back to Lord of the Rings that has stuff from it and things from it. And it's just there's a local writer who did the, not Saberhagen, not that writer, Terry Brooks.
Yeah.
Who, I mean, if you want to talk blatantly ripping off Lord of the Rings, those books are flat out a rewriting of Lord of the Rings, but they're great books. So as far as fantasy novels go and fantasy stories go, yeah, of course. So does every other fantasy movie.
Well, I thought that was an interesting way to go because this is on Prime, right?
Yes.
Isn't Prime also the one that is making the new Lord of the Rings?
Yep.
It is.
So it seems like, oh, well, all right. Never mind.
Well, no, it's like you could watch this and if you want to find things that make you think Lord of the Rings, you can find them. If you're just watching as a fantasy, it's not like Rand sits down with a old wizard and they get together and buddy up and then go on a trip to help the world. There's a guy who teams up with a wizard lady and they get up to go trade the world, but the way they get from point A to point B is completely different.
Okay. Right.
And so it's just like, yeah, you could find it. If you want to say it's a Lord of the Rings ripoff, you can definitely figure that out.
Do you think it helps to have read the books?
I don't know. The problem is I've read them two or three times. So if somebody says, I know what they're talking about. Right. And I know all the wires that bring the warders together. And so I don't know. I feel like if you hadn't read the books, it seems like you might get a little like, I don't know if they're planting seeds and they're going to explain as it goes along, or if they're just sort of skipping stuff, which I don't care. I don't care that one character that everybody complains about wasn't in Lord of the Rings, like, because he's a great character, but his story doesn't advance the story, the Lord of the Rings at all. Mm. So he's not there, fine. So I love the Alan Moore way of looking at interpretation things. His take was, I wrote my version of The Watchmen. Whatever these people I sold the rights to make out of it, that's their version.
Right.
So I don't care what they do with it. Because I already did my ultimate version of my story. And I feel that way with books. Like, that's the book.
Right.
If you want to interpret it directly, great. If you want to interpret it differently and create something kind of new, let's see how good it is.
I'm right there with you. Yeah. I will check this out. I haven't read the books.
Okay.
I shall report back. But before then, how about we take a little break? And then when we come back, we're talking road movies.
Should we pick him up? He has Bud Light.
He has an axe.
But he has Bud Light.
And an axe.
I'm sure there's a reason for it.
Hey, buddy. What's with the axe?
It's a bottle opener.
Hop in.
Refreshingly smooth Bud Light. Always worth it.
Look, here's Bud Light.
In a chainsaw?
We have returned. Really, what is League of Legends anyway? I mean...
I like that this is still boggling your mind. Still bouncing around in there.
We come back to record in the next couple of weeks and I said, well, I entered my first tournament of League of Legends, man. It's awesome.
This is really good. I'm team insert team name here. You guys should sign up.
Strange Eons video games.
Oh my God.
Oh boy.
If we start that.
This was your subgenre this one's mine. This time.
Yeah, so we've got road games. Road games? Well, that's... Anyways, I'll get to that in a moment. We've got road trips, hitchhikers, travel kind of stuff. And the movie I went with was 1981's Road Games.
Road Games.
What the hell?
The truck driver plays games.
Aren't you kind of young to be hitchhiking out here all by yourself?
Aren't you kind of old to be picking me up?
And a killer is playing the deadliest game of all.
Oh, he's just killed a girl.
Did he make love to her first?
I don't know. What's the difference?
It makes a lot of difference. I think in order to play the game properly, we have to know what he thinks of women.
No, it's Q-U-I-D. D is in death, the young girl, you cretin.
Jamie Lee Curtis is Hitch.
Panic and camera.
Now you're looking for a little adventure, huh?
I could go to Disneyland for a little adventure. What I'm looking for is a little excitement.
Road Games. Across 1,600 miles of desert highway, they're playing games of violence and sudden death. Stop soon. There won't be anyone left alive to play Road Games.
Is this why you chose this subgenre? Because I remember we were talking about this movie with Peter Rolick down at the Lovecraft
Peter,
Film
Festival. Yeah. And he said it was one of his top 80s.
Yeah. And I was
movies.
Like, what is this movie? I've never heard of it.
So, you know, me being the way I am now, as I popped, I want to see if it's out on Blu-ray. Blue and Scream Factory has a pretty good version that's like $15 or less on the time, so I'll just get it. I'm glad I did.
Oh, good. Excited.
The Rotten Tomatoes ratings from the critics, 91.
Whoa.
And from the crowd, 62.
That's good.
The budget was approximately $1.8 million, directed by Richard Franklin, who directed the Australian film Patrick.
Yeah, I love that movie.
Cloak and Dagger. Link, the monkey.
Oh God!
Moving on, yeah. Mm-hmm. Psycho 2.
Oh man,
and
love Psycho 2.
Dick Down Under, which sounds like a weird porn movie, but I don't think it is. Written by Everett DeRoach, who wrote Razorback, Link, Fortress, Patrick, the 2013 Patrick, Evil Awakens, and Richard Franklin was involved in the story, but he didn't do much of the. Script starring Stacy Keach.
Yeah.
215 credits. He's still got three films in pre-production right now.
Whoa.
Good for him.
Ninth Configuration, Mike Hammer in several movies. Just he's all over the place. And the wonderful Jamie Lee Curtis from Grandview, USA, The Love Boat and The Little Engine That Could.
Oh, yeah.
Aww.
A couple Australians, Marion Edward, who was in Raw Silk. And Steve Millichamp, who's in Mad Max as Roop and in Romper Stomper. Two very good Australian films. Romper Stomper is not a comfortable watch, but it's well done.
Not yet seen that one.
The film starts with Stacy, who is playing a character named Quid. He's got a long-haul trucker. And if you're a long-haul trucker in Australia, you're a long-haul trucker. And he is pulling up for the night at a place and gets a call that there's a strike going on and they're having a hard time getting meat moved. Does he want to do another thing right away? He's like, I'm supposed to have a 12-hour break. By the time he's done with the talk, the hotel he was going to stay at has gone from vacancy to no vacancy. Uh-oh. The guy who took the last room apparently was somebody he saw on the road pick up a hitchhiker that he'd ignored. It goes to the scene of this hitchhiker and the guy who picked her up in a room, and it's a beautiful giallo, almost level shot where she's nude, completely covered by the guitar she's playing, and the bathroom I'm assuming he's in has this super bright white light outlining the door frame, and she's all in really a strong red color, and it just looks freaking awesome. Like, okay, there's a filmmaker making this one, man. Doesn't go real well for the hitchhiker. The next morning, you wake up and the hitchhiker is very, very curious about the garbage being taken out, the guy driving. And Quid's dog, who's over there sniffing at the garbage and trying to figure out what's going on, but nothing really comes of that except for Quid noticing it. So now we go onto the road and it's time to introduce us to Quid. How do they introduce us? Saying a bunch of funny shit about people he's driving by. And it is some great, really fun lines. Even pass by a station wagon with kids who looks like they're the director or somebody wanted to put them in Kiss makeup, but couldn't quite get the thing. So it's sort of like a half Kiss, half something else makeup. Like, but I recognize that black star on your eye. And he travels with a wonderfully adorable dog, and it's well shot and interesting. There's cute little moments, like the dog gets scared by something he does, and it's not like a jump up. It's just the little jump that dogs do when you scare them a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's just really, really well done. He spends a fair amount of time doing that, but it doesn't get bad because Stacy Keach is fun to watch, and the lines are relatively clever. But then we see the van from last night shows up behind him, following him. So it's time to ratchet up the tension a little bit. He's kind of Quid's avoiding picking up hitchhikers because he's sort of watching this guy trying to figure out what up. And somebody does a cute little trick, which I'll leave because it's fun to watch in the movie, to get him to pick her up. But unfortunately for the film, Jamie Lee Curtis doesn't show until 40 minutes in.
Oh, interesting.
And I say unfortunately because their chemistry on screen is phenomenal. Huh. They are so good together. It is a little odd in that every place he stops, you see it's the same people. You see like all the people he was making fun of at the beginning, like in the station wagon or the guy that sneezes in his motorcycle helmet and all the stuff like that. They keep showing up at wherever he goes. The film is not that loosely, but adapted to the concept of Rear Window, where it's a guy, you know, who sees something and he's trying to figure out what's going on, and he keeps seeing the guy. Like one scene, he sees the guy. Is he burying something out there in the outback? What's going on? And little things like that. And they even managed to get Hitchcock a cameo.
Wait, Hitchcock's in this?
Jamie Lee Curtis picks up a pack of magazines and is flipping through them, and one of them is Hitchcock Presents.
Oh, sure. Like, oh, my gosh.
Nice. They also twist it to where the cops are starting to think maybe he's the killer.
Mm.
As a long-haul truck driver, apparently, I don't know if it's from the movie or if it's actually true in Australia, he had his full name on the outside of his truck. So the guy in the van could have easily gotten his name off of that. They nicely don't sit down and tie all these things together. A little segments and things are mentioned as a one-off quick thing, like when the cop says, well, your name was registered. He's like, I could have seen on the side. You know, it's just these quick little things. It's not a major plot point that we have to make sure you hear what we're saying. So it's really, really well done. There's a long scene, which is, they think they've caught him. And what makes the scene really good, but then really annoying, is the station wagon pulls up and for some reason has an alarm going off in it. And it's really loud and it goes off the whole scene. Like, there's some great shots in the movie. Like he makes a call. He's in a weird bar And there's this great 360 shot of the entire bar. So you see all the people and all the quirky little things that are going on. It's smart filmmaking. This is a well done film. They use the dog a few times to go investigating stuff. Pulls the movie together in all the right ways. So as you can tell, I really liked this one. And largely due to Stacey Keach. And then when Jamie Lee Curtis shows up, because man, they were good together on screen. I'll just say the last 20 minutes or so for you to enjoy, because I do fully, unlike the last movie I talked about, I do fully encourage you to go out and check this one out. It is a lot of fun. Now, we mentioned earlier, it's $1.8 million, which seems kind of piddly. At the time, it was the most expensive film shot in Australia.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
There's an interview with Stacey Keach on there, and he loved working on the movie. He said it was just a lot of fun, and they're driving in the middle of nowhere and traveling, and they'd set up as a group at the hotels as they were going. They traveled the road that they were shooting on.
Wow.
Richard Franklin gave the writer a copy of Rear Window to say, this is kind of the script I want you to write. He loved what he put together. But developed the idea and brought it to the while they were working together on the Blue Lagoon.
Oh, sure. It seems like a small, extremely large country town in which filmmakers cross paths frequently.
Yes. They wrote the first draft of Road Games in 8 days in the hotel at night during Blue Lagoon's production.
Whoa.
Don't know how many drafts they went to after that. And Franklin did acknowledge, and boy, do I agree with him, he really wishes he'd enlarged Jamie Lee Curtis's role. She's not in it a lot. Jamie Lee Curtis, on the other hand, did not necessarily have the greatest time on the shoot. Because at the time in Australia, if you shot a film, you could replace Australian actors if the person had a big enough name. Stacey Word is like, yeah, somehow I squeaked into that and they were okay with me. But Jamie's like, yeah, I really wasn't a name yet. So she apparently got some harassment from the crew and stuff about how you like stealing Australian jobs.
Oh, that sucks.
It wasn't all bad, but she did have a few moments of that. And here, to me, is an example of the stupid shit people write about on that matters not at all to the quality of a film. Truck he's driving had the Thermo King refrigeration unit on it, which apparently is a real thing. Mm-hmm. And I know he used it because the logo's really cool. But somebody wrote that the problem is the refrigeration units are powered by a separate and very noisy engine attached to the trailer. It's almost the size of a small car engine. It runs 24/7, and you never once hear that engine noise in this movie.
Unfortunate. I really wish all the sounds that we heard in real life was constantly berating my films.
Exactly. There you go. Stacey Keach actually learned to drive a 16-gear semi for this role.
Wow.
Wow.
Film is considered Ozploitation.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen it, it's covered in Not Quite Hollywood, which is a phenomenal documentary about Australian films. Mm. One of the extras on this is the unedited interviews with Jamie Lee Curtis and Stacey Keach and stuff that were featured on there, and they're really good. Road Games was not successful at the box office. anywhere it was released, really. Franklin thinks it's because it was, you know, the era of the slashers and nobody was going to see this kind of a movie. But for whatever reason, it didn't do well. But it did get him the gig for Psycho 2.
I gotta see this. It sounds great.
Yeah, it does sound incredible. I really, I want to go on Shout Factory and pick this thing up. Maybe it'll still be on sale somehow.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, the movie I chose... Now, it might kind of be looser fitting into into your criteria that it should be, but damn it, I watched it and I want credit for that. So the movie I'm going with is In the Tall Grass from 2019.
Help! I'm lost in here!
Did you hear that?
Someone out there?
Help me!
Cal?
Becky!
Something's not right about this. I think we should head back to the road.
Becky?
Travis?
Who are you? What's going on?
I came looking for you!
What?
How did you get here before us?
I don't know.
My boy, he's lost in here too.
This is nuts!
It's only a field.
What's happening with you?
I'm never gonna find her.
You can find things, but it's easier once they're dead.
How long have we been here?
I'm not sure. That sounded like me.
This field doesn't make any sense.
Name one thing in here that does.
Just chance? We're all here for a reason.
Becky!
Oh my God.
It's Gramps. It's just Gramps.
I call bullshit on this. As
there
a road
is a road.
Movie.
There is a road, sir, and it plays an incredibly important part in this whole thing.
I don't think I've seen this one.
Have you seen
it? The contempt you have for our listeners is shocking.
It's pretty bad. I'm sorry, everybody. I need to publicly apologize, but I watched this fucking film and now you're going to hear about it. So this has a Rotten Tomato score of 36% from critics, 33% from audience. It is obviously a very recent movie from Netflix, which means there is no budget or box office information that is publicly available, of course. The director and writer is Vincenzo Natali, who has 31 credits, most notably Cube, Cypher, and Splice. Nowadays, you will find him directing a lot of one-off or two-off or three-off episodes of TV series, including The Stand, Lock and Key, Westworld, Lost in Space. So he's definitely still out there. Also, he has an interesting background where he has a really, really strong presence as an art department person. He has 18 credits for that, including a huge section of Eek the Cat, Little Bear, Beetlejuice. He did 65 episodes of the animation Babar and Tintin. So I think that's kind of cool and interesting. It might explain a lot about the kinds of shots that he captures. This is, of course, based on In the Tall Grass by Stephen King and Joe Hill. Father, son, together at last.
Wait,
writing.
Take it. Kelly's seen this one.
I have seen this. This would have been a great pick for a movie that was about grass.
Well,
but not a movie about roads.
There is a road that the grass is on the side of, sir. The road is very involved.
My.
We'll get there. It is starring Laisla de Oliveira, who plays Becky / the sister. She's been in 19 things, including a pretty heavy, heavy role in Lock and Key, where she's in 11 episodes of that as Ellie / Dodge. She's also in Code 8 and a lot of random other TV. Avery Wittard, who plays Cal / the brother. He has been in 6 things, including A New York Wedding, which is a TV film, and a lot of kind of bad random one-off episode stuff. We have Harrison Gilbertson, who is Travis / Becky's boyfriend. He's been in 21 things, including 10 episodes of Harrow, 6 episodes of Picnic at Hanging Rock. He was also in Fallen and Need for Speed, and 12 episodes of Conspiracy 365, which I have no idea what that is. Will Bull Jr., who plays Tobin, which is the little kid lost in the grass. He has been in 10 things. He is really, really good, but not a lot of stuff, but 68 episodes of something called Bunked. So I'm guessing that's probably a Disney thing. Rachel Wilson, who apparently not the wife of Patrick Wilson, which I was going off the assumption of for a while there. She plays Tobin's mom slash the wife of Ross. She's part of the family that gets lost in the grass. She's in 106 Things. She's a Canadian actress who was in Austin Powers: Spy Who Shagged Me, Mystery Alaska, and a ton of TV episodes of things I've never heard of because they are Canadian. And Patrick Wilson, who plays Ross slash the husband. You would know him as King Arm in Aquaman and Night Owl in Watchmen. And apparently he starred in the episodes of Angels in America, which I did not realize. Also, I guess you might know him as Ed Warren in Conjuring and Josh Lambert in Insidious, but whatever. Don't worry about that. The plot. There's a road. There's a road. And people are driving along it. Namely, Becky and her brother Cal, who are traveling across America. They are traveling, people. They're going from one point to another on this road. And she is super, super pregnant. They are going to San Diego because she is going to give her baby up for adoption. Her and her boyfriend are seriously super on the rocks, if not fully broken up, because he basically found out she was preggers, freaked out, told her she should get an abortion, and kind of abandoned her into the situation. So her brother has swooped in to help, and he is driving her over to San Diego so she can give a rando couple her baby. He is eating a burger on the road, in the car. It smells real strong. She can't handle it. She asks him to pull over, which is the only reason we're at the grass at all, because otherwise we are fully in a road movie. And she has to narf because it smells very strong. While she is busy puking, she hears some people in this grass, or a person in this grass, calling for help. In fact, it's a young boy. They are trying to help this kid figure out how to get out of the grass from not going inside, but it seems like he's clearly lost. And they're like, well, he sounds like he's right here. So we can just, like, you know, just walk a few feet in and grab him. Like, he's obviously having trouble. So of course they go into the grass. Immediately cannot find this boy. It always sounds like he's right there, but he isn't. So they decide they need to go back to the roadside to figure shit out. And they cannot leave. They cannot get out of the grass to the road, which is the most important part of this film. In the tall grass, a really road movie.
And we're what, like 5 minutes into the movie at this point?
The road comes back twice at least. So I'm going to put that out there. All right. We're not even 5 minutes in this movie. they realize they cannot get out of the grass and that they are stuck. They are trying to figure out what this all means. Time is going by. They lose sight of each other. And finally, Cal finds Tobin, who is standing next to a dead crow. Tobin tells him that dead things won't move in the grass, which is very ominous. Many other things obviously do. The grass has a mind of its own, and it kind of recreates space and maybe even time. He also tells Cal that Becky will die soon, and that the rock told him that. Tobin then leads Cal to a fun big rock out in this grass and tells him to touch it. But before he can, he's got his hand reaching for this giant black obelisk thing, the hair standing up off the top of his arm. And we hear Becky scream and he runs after her. Cut to Travis, the shithead father of Becky's child, arrives at the road. He's driving alongside it. He pulls over. He sees their car abandoned next to this church that's across the street from the road. And it looks like all the cars are really dusty and dirty. It looks like some time has passed. Well, it certainly doesn't feel like it. He finds a book on the ground with her name scrawled inside, so he knows it's her. And he decides to go ahead and investigate the grass and try and figure out what happened to her. So he enters the grass and discovers Tobin. Tobin shows Travis Becky's corpse because she's dead for reasons, as he had told Cal. Tobin then also arrives outside of the grass with his parents because they're on a road trip going down the road. And they stop, and Tobin hears something off in the grass, and it's Travis calling for Tobin because Travis was just with Tobin. And then, of course, the family dog runs into the grass, and therefore Ross, the father, and the mother all run out into the grass. Inside the grass, Ross kind of discovers the stone and touches it. Meanwhile, Tobin, Travis, Becky, and Cal all find one another, all from slightly different times, because obviously Becky is now still alive. What does it mean? So essentially in this movie, time is out of sync. The grass seems to be made stronger by this strange, there's all these hints of the strange ancient tribal group that sacrifices bodies to the grass. They worship the grass. They live with the grass in some kind of harmony. This rock is also a big part of it. It whispers to people and makes them go mad and murder each other within the grass, but it's also begging for sacrifice. There are time loops happening. Ross, by touching the stone, becomes sort of the hand of the grass god, and he does his bidding, and the baby may or may not be a sacrifice at some point in this movie in at least one of the versions. So it's really fucked up, by the way. In the meantime, basically, Travis, this is a redemption story for Travis. He's trying to do the right thing and save Becky, stand up in the way that he previously did not. And also, we have to put up with random villains that come along the way, including Cal, the brother, who has a creepy, gross-ass thing for his sister that Travis does call him out on. And he's like, dude, you just want a boner, and I'm sorry that you can't because you're her brother. And it's clear that he does. So, this movie, what I like about it, it has a road in it and they travel on that road, and that's pretty neat. I like how much of a road movie this is. I really like the sort of redemption of Travis. I think that that's really interesting. I think that's a cool storyline. I like the set. I don't think that the grass ever really got stale for me, and that's partly because of how it's shot, but also how it's broken up between adding new information about the grass and how dead things can act as markers and tomes, and how you also have that rock. And then there's a bowling alley that's like in the middle of this grass too. So you get these sort of interesting other features that you discover in this grass that help make it feel like a larger space.
There's a bowling alley in the middle of this grass. What are you talking about?
Yeah, there is. I know. Well,
so
that's
it makes
the question.
Perfect sense. What is the problem?
Hey, man, the bowling alley is pretty freaking cool. I like Patrick Wilson being a scary motherfucker. The thing I don't like about it is it has the same problem that a lot of Stephen King adaptations into films have, where it feels like there are a bunch of things and there's just like one thing too many somewhere in here. There's just, or two or three things too many, like this kind of weird ancient, like Aztecan style cult worshiping grass people out there. And then like Ross getting overtaken. And there's just a lot of set pieces that just become bigger and bigger. And it gets us further away from the core story. And I think if you do the core story right, you don't need all that extra stuff. So Kelly's giving me the worst look. He looks so unhappy.
Well, I hate this movie. This is a terrible movie.
Yeah.
And it is a horrible adaptation. The story is 8 pages long.
Sure.
Whoa.
So it's just, I think they gave, who is this? Vincenzo Natali?
Yes.
I think Netflix basically said, whatever you want.
Yeah,
no,
you did
supervision.
The cube. I believe in you.
And so he gave them this, and they were all like, "All right, I do like, you know how much I love Patrick Wilson, and doesn't he have like a thin mustache in this?
Yeah,
it was like,
he looks real creepy
pencil thin mustache or something. And I was like, you know what, it looks good on you.
Yeah, you just know from the instant you see this guy that he's like, there's something wrong.
He's trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. A little bit of fun trivia about it. This was in development initially in 2015, but it failed to start. And then in May of 2018, Netflix announced it and purchased the film rights with Natalie directed up as the director. Natali. Director Vincenzo Natali said, quote, "Who would think that grass could be frightening? Trust Stephen King and Joe Hill to find a way. They have transformed an otherwise innocuous Kansas field into a stage for some of the most disturbing horror fiction I have ever read." So those 8 pages really had an impression on him. Manga artist Shintaro Keigo did the concept art design for the film adaptation, which I think makes a lot of sense since the director had such a strong like art background. Patrick Wilson stepped in for James Marsden, who was originally meant to be in that role for this film, but had to decline because he went off to do Sonic the Hedgehog, another film I love. The film that Kelly doesn't. The film was shot in Ontario. The dilapidated church was constructed for the film in Perth South, and the filming took place outside of a bowling alley in Elmira, Ontario. There is a 1959 Chevrolet standing outside the church with its grill customized to resemble Christine, the 1958 Plymouth from Stephen King's novel with the same name. If you look carefully, the stained glass in the church looks like grass. And a film premiered at Fantastic Fest and basically a month later came out on Netflix. The tagline is, "Some places have a mind of their own." It is a terrible tagline. They could have done so much better. Shame on them. IMDb top review from Fella Shibby says, quote, "I got trapped into this purgatory only after seeing Patrick Wilson in the trailer. Weak plot stretched unnecessarily into 101 mins of boring grasses in WTF stone." And Claudio Carvalho on the other side of the coin says, "The intriguing supernatural field."
Yeah, the original story is just, I don't know if there's any of the pregnancy stuff, but it's just a couple who hear a kid in a field of tall grass, and then they get, you know, lost in the grass, and they realize that the grass does this to people. It brings them in by having a voice. I don't think they ever get to see the kid or anything like that. They're just stuck. And you realize, oh, this is a field of grass that lures people into it by pretending there's somebody stuck in it.
It's the Stephen King curse of lawn-based adaptations, I guess, are the worst ones.
Probably.
Like Lawnmower Man?
Right.
Lawn-based adaptations.
Well, first of all, let me just say that I really care for the listeners, but I also have the utmost respect for our fellow podcaster, Eric, who asked for a particular genre of film, and so I went and found one in that genre.
Yeah, well, Eric, I respect you in my own way.
Not only that, Road Games sounds amazing, but yeah, this movie is so fucking good, and it is from 1973. It is a little British film called The Death Wheelers, also known as Psychomania.
This is a cool fucking movie, man.
It really is. I could find no budget or box office information on it. The Rotten Tomatoes critics have it at 86%.
Wow.
And the audience has it at 53%. It was directed by Don Sharp, who has directed a bunch of films. Kiss of the Vampire, Face of Fu Manchu, Curse of the Fly, and 35 other credits.
Wow.
Written by Arnaud Desur, who wrote Lady Scarface, The Man Who Wouldn't Die, and Horror Express, and also written by Julian Zemet, who wrote Psych 59, Crack in the World, Pancho Villa, and was a co-writer on Horror Express. It stars Nikki Henson, literally Nikki, N-I-C-K-Y. The man is, He goes by Nikki.
Wow. Not even N-I-C-K-I.
Well, that would be the way if it was a woman, I imagine.
Well, it's a little more manly, though.
I think that you would just go by Nick at some point in your life.
Sure. That does make sense.
Still, Nikki Henson had 111 credits, including Witchfinder General, Syriana, a ton of British television, like The Avengers, Shine on Harvey Moon, and 36 episodes of EastEnders. It also stars Mary Larkin, who's mostly British TV, including Crown Court, EastEnders, and BBC Playhouse. And Michelle, same thing, a bunch of British TV, the two Ronnies, hello, hello.
Oh my God.
And Lefkis Man.
Wow.
And is also starred George Sanders, who had 138 credits, including Rebecca, The Lodger, The Picture of Dorian Gray, All About Eve, Village of the Damned. He was Mr. Freeze in the Batman 66 TV show. Man. And he was the voice of Shere Khan in the Jungle Book cartoon.
Wow. Oh, that's cool.
So, Eric, you've seen this. Vanessa, yeah. You have not seen this.
Correct.
There's a road.
Okay, sounds just like tall grass so far.
So, our main character is Tom, who is described at one point in the movie as an amiable psychopath.
Oh my God.
Is the leader of a violent teen gang named the Living Dead. He loves his mother and riding his motorcycle with his girlfriend, Abby. And there is a ton of motorcycle gang activity on this movie. Just like disturbing driving scenes. The stunts in this are like somebody had to have been killed in that.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So Tom, he dabbles in a bit of black magic.
As you do.
And his gang spends a fair amount of time at this ancient ruin located in the Surrey countryside known as the Seven Witches. It is kind of a Stonehenge-like circle of stones that are all about 6 feet tall.
Huh.
And called the Seven Witches.
Hmm.
Similarly, his mom also dabbles in a bit of magic, and her sinister butler, Shadwell.
Oh my God.
They get their kicks out of holding seances in their home while they worship some sort of frog god. It's very Lovecraftian.
Wow.
We are told that Tom's father had vanished in a mysterious room in their house shortly after Tom's birth. And now that we are hitting Tom's 18th birthday, he goes into that room and he sees the frog god. This incident leads Tom to kill himself.
Ah.
He commits suicide by vehicle. He has the cops chasing him and he's got his girlfriend on the back of the thing. And as he turns a corner, he drops her off and then he goes driving straight off a bridge.
Whoa. Wait, wasn't that our main character?
Yep.
Okay. Uh-huh. Whoa.
And the whole thing is that this whole thing kind of starts from his mom. We get the feeling that his mom wanted him to do exactly this.
Oh.
So, per his wishes, he is buried with his motorcycle.
Oh my God.
At the center of the Seven Witches.
That's a really big casket.
Uh-huh. And there is this spectacular scene where there's a young couple that's arguing around the stones and everything. And then they suddenly hear the revving of a motorcycle. And they're like, where the hell is that coming from? And he explodes out of the ground on his motorcycle. And I was like, you know what? This movie, if it gets stupid or whatever, it was worth watching just for this scene.
Oh my
it
God.
Was so cool. And he, of course, then kills those two kids that were arguing.
Oh, sure.
So,
okay.
It's pretty fucking great.
Taking a twist.
So now he is undead, which means that he has kind of superhuman strength and he can't be killed, which he proceeds to show everybody by massacring the people drinking at a local pub.
Sure.
His gang, they don't believe it's him, but he finally convinces them. And then he convinces his gang that if they commit suicide, and they believe strongly enough that they will all come back, that they will all come back and they will be just like him. So they proceed to do this one by one, kill themselves very publicly, like leaping out of buildings
and oh
shit in front of cops and all this stuff. And with the exception of his girlfriend, Abby, who is not into this, and she's getting more and more worried about him and his violent tendencies and all this stuff. They then, this undead motorcycle gang called the Living Dead, proceed to terrorize the countryside.
Oh, my God.
So the police chief, who is overwhelmed by all of the crimes that are happening, and they're happening and being described to him as, oh, it was this person who did it. And he's like, well, it couldn't be. That guy jumped out of a building in front of me, and I know for a fact he is dead. So he thinks that somebody has been stealing the corpses of this biker gang
and pretending to be them. It.
And so with that in mind, he releases a fake news story that Abby has also died, because he's like, okay, whoever's doing this will now come to collect her. Well, the problem is the people do come to collect her, and it's all the dead motorcyclists, but she's not actually dead. So now Tom is very pissed off because he thought, oh, she finally did it. He didn't. They kidnap her and they take off with the police chasing him and everything. Now, for whatever reason, couldn't figure out why Tom's mom is kind of disgusted with all the crimes they've been committing, even though she was the one who kind of initiated this whole thing, has come back as the Living Dead. But she decides to put a stop to it by basically breaking her her deal with the Frog God.
Oh,
so that's where everybody's getting their power. So she's like, "Fuck it, I'm out." So Tom and the other bikers have kidnapped Abby, and they've taken her to the Seven Witches, and they tell her that she has to commit suicide then and there, or they're going to kill her. And she's like, fuck you, I won't do it. And so Tom starts strangling her, but as he's starting to strangle her, we're getting cuts over to his mom, who has, you know, broken her deal with the Frog God. And it gets pretty cool, because their power all comes from this deal she made. And I don't know, it's pretty great movie for a little British 73 film. It's got some crazy driving stunts, looked very dangerous, and I did read in my trivia that there were plenty of injuries from the various stunts.
Oh, sure.
I really loved it. The ending is pretty great. I wish the effects were just a tad better, but it's got a fun frog transformation scene and a very cool explanation of what the Seven Witches actually are. So, trivia. The film was almost universally blasted by critics upon its release. One reviewer for the London Times wrote that the film was only fit to be shown at an SS reunion party.
Oh my God. Oh, fuck.
A strange interpretation.
Yes.
Right?
During a BBC interview, let's see, in like 2013, Nicky Henson said that he always thought the film was terrible and only decided to be in it because he thought no one would ever see it.
Okay.
In fact, he is quoted as saying, "At the time, I thought if you do dodgy films, nobody pays to see dodgy films. Of course, you're not realizing that years later they come out on DVD and become cult films." Shock Till You Drop called the film a great one-shot horror movie filled with weird, something eerie atmosphere, crazy stunt work, cheeky performances, mild kink, and a unique charm all its own. And Variety called it a low-budget, well-done shocker with a tightly knit plot and a believable surprise ending. It has, you know, universally blasted upon its release, but it has gained cult status, and as you saw, 86% from the critics now. So, one last final thing. Not only the final film of George Sanders, but the legend goes that after filming this movie, he went to his hotel room, swallowed a bottle of pills, and left a note saying, this is his actual suicide note, "Dear world, I am leaving because I am bored. I feel I have lived long enough. I am leaving you with your worries in this sweet cesspool. Good luck."
Wow.
Oh, damn.
Jeez. Yep. Okay.
The Death Wheelers. It is available, Eric tells me, on Arrow now.
No, I don't think it is anymore. I think it was briefly.
Okay. I think I had to watch it via YouTube, but it had a really nice, it was a pristine looking print. So.
Wow.
Oh boy, this is just a good one. I really got this one.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's crazy.
So we know that next episode is going to be Ego Fest.
Yes.
But Vanessa will have the pick for the episode after that.
So right.
Maybe give us a little hint so we can get started on it early.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that I would love to, we haven't been to outer space in a hot minute or outer space adjacent vehicles. So I'm thinking that we could all kind of pick out a film where a spaceship is a prime scene place that takes place for the film.
Stop talking. We got it.
Okay. please let me go. Can I go home? I can't.
Spaceships. Okay. Spaceships. So the episode after next is spaceships.
Spaceships. Yep. Like even if they could find a spaceship or maybe they're taken into a spaceship or somebody is in a spaceship flying from place to place, just spaceship oriented movies.
say spaceship one more time.
Spaceship.
This is the part where I stumble over thanking everybody for participating in the value for value model. We really appreciate that. You guys rock. Yeah. And even if it's just liking and sharing posts, that is so important. There's value to that and we really appreciate it. So thanks to everybody who's doing that. Thanks to Danny and Ron and Carlos and
Jason,
Bob and Jason.
Ongoing support.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Can't thank you enough.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's always exciting. I just had some friends, speaking of English films and England and weirdness. I just had some friends from England who I hadn't seen in 18 years and one in 10. And at least one of them was like, oh yeah, I listen to your podcast. So thanks for checking that out.
That's nice. Very nice. All right, are you done talking about yourself? You can save that for next week?
I guess. Sorry, I can't help it. It's just in my blood to be so vain as to talk about myself once per episode.
All right, you guys, I'm tired, and I'm tired of you, and I want you out of my house.
Yeah, cool.
We'll see how that goes.
Great to see you, too.
See ya.
Bye.
Our show is recorded somewhere high above Naval Station Everett at the nexus of all realities and is engineered and produced by Eric Margaret. Our theme music is Strange Eons Part 1 by the band Nightshade and is used with permission. Find Strange Eons Radio on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and wherever fine podcasts are found.
I watched this fucking film, and now you're going to hear about it.